That means that you're projecting ahead is what, I mean, you're looking ahead and this is the timeframe it's going to take and these might be.
Yes, Representative Sanford, members of the committee, if you'll indulge me a couple more slides, I'll get into just that point with the financial plan. So in terms of cost to date, there's been about $430 million invested to date by the Diversion Authority in making progress on the program. Most of that is in lands and acquiring lands under the channel. There's approximately 200 properties acquired to date, many home buyouts and relocations, and of course the projects that Nathan reviewed in the Fargo in-town project. That spent to date is double asterisked, and the footnote notes that is not all of the costs that have been spent in Fargo. Not all of those projects were part of the federal diversion project. They were complementary, so those costs are not captured in this estimate, but have already been invested and already paid for and completed. So to start to get into Representative Sanford's question about how we approach a long-term project, we use an iterative process and some tools to let us inform us about what those funding and financing decisions need to be. We take all the project activities, the implementation logic of how they're related and when they're going to be sequenced, and basically build a cost by month over the life of the construction. We then run that through a financial model that is conducted by Ernst & Young Infrastructure Advisors out of New York. And what's added to the base 2018 dollar cost is the cost of escalation over the construction period, which is about 6.5, 7 years. So escalation in terms of construction costs, interest rate considerations, and of course the cost of borrowing money and financing the construction throughout the construction period is all part of then the total money that has to be expended in order to get the project built. And I've got more slides to get into a little more detail. So as you look at the construction period, this slide shows that the financial plan is looking at all those funding and financing needs to cover the cost through construction. So this is a graph of 2019 through 2025, basically the planned completion of the channel portion of the project. And the solid portion of those bars is essentially PAYGO. That's what's available in annual sales tax revenues that can be applied to the project.
Sir, if I may.
Yes.
On the sheet that we have in our book has got a little more writing to it than what your slide has.
Yep, I'm going to make that point.
Okay, well, I would like to discuss a little bit more with regards to what Representative Martinson mentioned was the P3. Are you going to cover the P3 in depth where you are, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. So this is the additional writing that Representative Schmidt mentioned. Basically, the point is that for all the cross-hatched costs, they have to be provided, since the only source of revenue the Diversion Authority has at their disposal is sales tax revenues, which the locals have passed and have committed to tax themselves through 2084. The only sources to pay for those construction costs in addition to that are grant funds, whether it be from the federal government, the state of North Dakota, or the state of Minnesota. Public financing, both short and long term. So the Diversion Authority would be borrowing money to pay for those and paying it back long term. And in this particular case with the P3, they are bringing about $400 million of private financing in both debt and equity to the table. So the combination of those then pays for the total cost during construction. The short term debt is then at the end of construction converted into long-term debt, and the financial plan determines the funding and financing to cover those costs and, as we say, the cost of operations and long-term debt repayments. The biggest component of that is shown in the slide in light blue, and those are called availability payments. In a public-private partnership, the contract between the Diversion Authority and the developer means that the developer makes the asset available, meaning it's ready to accept floodwaters, it's in the proper condition, it's been maintained properly, and in return for that on an annual basis, the Diversion Authority pays them a payment that repays them for construction costs, repays them for operation and their debt that they took out to build the project.
And that's paid for by sales tax?
It is paid for completely by sales tax revenues.
Yes. And if the sales tax revenues aren't there?
If the sales tax revenues are not there, there is the ultimate backstop for that is an assessment district. But the financial plan is what we call balanced, in that the availability payments, the sales tax bonds, debt service, long-term bond debt service are all covered by sales tax. Our estimate for sales tax growth is about 1.5% per year, and we're using, and we'll get into what's changed in this in a minute, but it's a fairly conservative approach with respect to the base and the growth rate of what's expected for sales tax.
Representative Martinson.
Thank you. You mentioned assessment as a backup. Is this property assessment, special assessments?
There is a special assessment district, tax assessment district, that has been formed for the sole purpose of securing better financing rate on sales tax bonds than you can get in the marketplace for pure sales tax revenues. So the assessment district is the ultimate backstop for being able to borrow money against sales tax revenues at a more attractive rate than what you would get with borrowing against.
So are you using property tax at all? Because, I mean, that's, to me, is the logical place for you to be getting this. The city of Fargo and the property owners of Fargo are the ones that are benefiting from this. They should be getting the assessment. When I go down to Fargo and pay sales tax, I'm paying for your project.
Representative Munson, we thank you very much for that, but present cost, property tax generates about $25 million basically to run the city events. The sales tax is the reason we have that in place, is that generates about $48 million a year, and that's what could be utilized for that. The people who come visit help us, but the city and county make a sales tax available to help us with this. And that's a 50-year sales tax. That's pretty hard to get. But the other question, Representative Schmidt, is the fact is that if we don't have the money from the sales tax, we would have to trigger the tax assessment district. So,
Representative Sanford.
Just to follow up to that, Mayor, what is the nature of the assessment district? Is it the city limits? Is it how far does that extend? City, county, what is the nature of the?
It is essentially the benefited properties that benefit from the construction of the project. So it includes both city and county properties that are benefited by the protection, that are protected by the project.
Is it more than Cass County that's involved in as well, or?
It's primarily Cass County is the benefited properties, but you have Eric here to answer that question.
Eric Dodge, thank you, Representative Sanford. The benefiting properties are all within the diversion boundary, not outside of the diversion boundary. And so those property owners that have property within the, from the Red River out to the diversion channel would be included in the benefit category.
Atonement varies too.
Yeah, and of within that boundary, there's, I believe, 7 or 8 different benefit regions, depending on where your property is. Some properties have higher benefits and some properties have lower benefits.
Well, with a follow-up on that, the properties north of Fargo, do they benefit from this? And if so, they're going to be charged as well, correct?
Any property that is located within the diversion, between the Red River and the diversion channel, so that would include, say, Harwood, for example, they are included in the benefit region. They will receive some improved, and frankly, Harwood, quite a bit of improved flood protection by the project, so they are included in the assessment district
benefit.
So moving from this picture combined with the last slide, this in 2016 was in balance, and in balance meaning that the voter approved sales taxes covered all the annual payments, so covered all of the debt service and all of the availability payments required to build and operate the project through the life of the repayment of the debt. What has changed since 2016, and one of the reasons that we're here today, is that obviously budgeted program costs have increased due to escalation in Plan B. That's about a 25% increase in the capital cost. Sales tax base revenues from that period to today are down about 9% with respect to the money available to the diversion authority. Estimated sales tax growth rate, we have reduced that in the model from 3% assumption in 2016 to 1.5% today. Short-term borrowing rates have increased up a little over a percentage point, which has a pretty dramatic effect on the cost of money during construction. And long-term borrowing rates have also increased up almost a percent. So in terms of the answer to Representative Sanford's question, the financial model takes all of these factors into consideration for determining what combination of grant funds and loan funds are required to fund the project. The conclusion, unfortunately, that we reached is that the project without additional money is not bankable with the existing funding amount, the sales tax revenues available, and the assessment district capacity for bonding. So additional federal and state grant funds and low-cost, long-term loans would be required to ensure that the sales tax revenue cover that annual payment and the project is financially solvable.
Are you saying then, sir, that the P3 is not going to be valid to pick up some of the excess?
So the public-private partnership part of the project is, and I'll have a couple slides on that later in terms of
please, because we're running out of time.
If it's my, okay, we'll move through. As a result of that challenge, the Diversion Authority asked us to look at multiple scenarios, different federal funding levels, different state funding levels, different state funding timing, and a couple of quick observations. Decreasing the grant funds by about $50 million increases the loan required to balance things by about $75 million. There's that cost of time and money. And funding the project over four bienniums versus three bienniums increased that loan by about $25 million. So these are large numbers, and the cost of money does have a material impact on the affordability. The scenario that the Diversion Authority selected to move forward with is scenario F, the last one there, which was $300 million in Fed, $300 million in state over three bienniums, and a long-term low-interest loan of around $250 million.
Question with regards to that $300 million from the state, is that part of the 2020, which now sits with the extra two bienniums at 66.5 each for 133?
Is that
part of the 300?
Yes, it would be part of the 300, and I have a slide on that.
It could also be used for the P3, as I understand it from Representative Martinson's comments.
Yes, and I'll have a couple more comments. Let me rush through these as quickly as I can. So this is what that looks like, and we've recently updated this slide. The locals are in for around $1 billion. And again, these are all in 2018 dollars basis. $86 million from the state of Minnesota, $870 requests from the state, and the $750 million request from the federal government, which now has been secured. And in a supplemental answer to the earlier questions about the commitment of the feds, that is represented in a public-private, project partnership agreement with the federal government, where it's a contractual obligation for them to provide the funds. The other mitigating fact on that federal commitment, it is the first public-private partnership project for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's their pilot program. It's the way they want to look to the future to do things differently. And there's extreme confidence that they will follow through with that commitment, not only because it's contractually obligated through the PPA, but because it's a demonstration project of their ability to do things differently.
Okay. Just a few more. Representative Sanford.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so to be clear, if this project or if this option were put in place and it did not do the job, we would be back to the property tax backstop as the one that makes it up at the end. Is that the deal?
That would be one of the alternatives to fund the project. I think an extremely unpopular one with respect to the local community.
Okay.
Please, sir, just a few more. If you could summarize it up, it's appreciated.
So I won't spend any time going through the details of the state funding request. It, as you know, was 166.5 over three bienniums, The timing of that money is fairly important. So what we're looking at now are some slices of the cost estimate. So this graph on slide 27 represents the cash that the Diversion Authority will pay out during construction. It totals about $1.8 billion. It includes their obligations to pay for local construction, cost share match, and progress payments to the public-private partnership in the amount of about $740 million. The P3 contract's worth about $1 billion or so. They bring $400 million, and the Diversion Authority will pay them about $740 million in progress payments.
Okay, now back to that again. Now, the P3, you said, just says you're going to bring about $1 billion.
About $400 million, yes.
Okay, but part of that, again, goes back to the state's contribution to the project, correct? I mean, that's what we've said twice now. I want to make sure you're carrying through.
The $400 million is out of the billion, excuse me, out of the $1 billion, $400 million will be brought by the private sector as a part of their contribution and stake in the game, basically, for building the project. The remaining $700 million will be funded by sales tax revenues on a PAYGO basis, state and state funds, when available, and short-term loans that the Diversion Authority will take out. The finance model, in order to produce the lowest cost possible, applies cash when you have it, state funding when you have it, and when those are not sufficient in a particular year, you have to borrow the rest. So it depends on the timing of those payments, how much of each pot you're using every year. But the financial model does have some state money applied to these large payments.
And just in simplistic terms, the bottom part of the diversion is the Corps' responsibility. Basically, everything else is state, local, and what we have together. So that we're partners on all the rest.
And for clarity, and this answers an earlier question as well, the federal money, the federal 750, is viewed from the financial plan as its own separate bucket. The timing and construction of federal works will be dependent upon their appropriation. It really has little bearing on the affordability of the project with respect to these dollars that are the Diversion Authority's responsibility in town, the P3 project, and all their soft costs and land.
Representative Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you want to finish, but so just to follow up on the last answer, and I apologize for not following up then, but you said that the property tax would be the backstop. It was one of the options, I think, is what you suggested.
The tax assessment district, yes.
Yeah. So the tax assessment district, is that the backstop, or what do you mean by one of the options?
The only source of funds to pay the annual expenses for the Diversion Authority in the financial model are sales tax revenues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to directly answer the question, in the event of a shortfall in the sales tax revenues, the Diversion Authority would either need to be able to provide some short-term funding to make up that year's gap, or access the assessment district as the source of those funds. It's not a given that they would automatically assess through the assessment district. Okay. Depends on the magnitude of the shortfall in any particular year. If you go back to that graph that has all of the payments and the sales tax line, at the moment it's in balance. We have contingency in the estimate. We have an assumption on sales tax escalation and sales tax revenues. We believe it's appropriate to begin the project with. And there's some flexibility in the out years as to how you handle those ups and downs on a sales tax budget. Well,
and I'll just cut to the chase. I guess what I'm getting at is that, and this is not unusual, but the project costs have escalated. And we've had a new estimate and then another estimate. So what I'm trying to get at is, from the standpoint of commitment of the state, if the commitment of the state gets to the level of Plan F or whatever the letter was there, that's the level you're expecting from the state, period.
To to your question, Representative Sanford, on a P3 project, it's a bid project. What we hope to do over the next 6 months is bid it. We would have it to you next spring. We'd have it for the next biennium. When the P3 bid is, it doesn't escalate after that. That's the bid. So then we have that put to bed. The federal part is covered by the feds. So what we're asking you and what we need help is how to get that commitment to pay the P3 or pay the other parts of the project, whether it's bonding or the state wants to do a different methodology. We're now on the brink ready to go. And anytime we delay a year or 2 years, then that adds increased costs. So if we want to keep our costs good, if there's some way in which we can get through the hump that we're here right now, which we know about, that really makes it happen and it keeps your costs to a better level.
Representative Martinson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what we're trying to get at is, are you going to tell us that you're not going to be back again for money?
The intent is not to come back.
Senator Grunberg here.
Senator Grunberg is going to help with this one.
Representative Martinson, yes. If we complete this package, we feel we have the highest degree of confidence in all the detailed work with the technical analysis, the financial acumen at the $2.75 billion to get this project done. And how you decide we work together to package that $300 million to cash flow to meet these numbers so that it balances, as Martin has said, we're there to help guide and help be part of that process to make when you make your decision. We've got our numbers built in through 2019 to begin in 2020. So we've got 2019 to work with these other issues, contested cases an example, and work through this. Once we meet that timeline deadline, what we've estimated in whatever the date in 2020 is, every day we wait is $50 million, it's $140,000 a day in escalation, or $50 million a year. So if we are stalled for 2 years, or to use the Senate's analogy of stranded assets because of contested case or whatever, then we're coming back. But we get this thing going, and we're ready to go. And so we will make it work with
but
what...
But you will come back if you have to, because we didn't expect to be here today for another $300 million.
I was part of that decision when we asked those questions in 13. This is it.
And we got the same answer. Yeah.
So, but we have a plan.
Yeah, we got the answer.
But to answer your question, we've had a lot of things happen in the last 4 years too. Is there, you know, the litigation and the things going on? So we're more confident now with the permit in hand. We can go ahead.
Let's close this up so that we can move on, please.
Couple of quick points. This compares the original request with the Senate bill version of 2020, 66.5 over 5. And obviously, the direct math is $167 million in direct funding gap. Based on time value of money through construction, that amount probably doubles. So we are back in the situation that if there's no change in the Senate version of the project is not bankable and can't move forward with our P3. Second point I want to make quickly is this lacks sufficient legislative intent to proceed with a public-private partnership. So again, this is a different slice of the obligations of the authority. These are those progress payments to the P3 developer. They total about $740 million over five payments. We intend to resume the procurement on that in 2019. It's about a 10 to 12 month procurement process to get the procurement started and get the bidders on board. They will invest $10 to $15 million each throughout that procurement process getting ready. And in 2020, we expect that price to be locked in then for about $1 billion of what's left. So almost half of what's left on the project will be locked in 2020. And I think it's fair to say that if the diversion authority comes back, it'll be with some certainty with respect to where that price came in and being able to move forward with the construction cost. One thing is certain, by not getting the legislative intent, we cannot convince our P3 developers to invest their $400 million, and they want to make sure they can get paid back. We almost certainly will lose the 2 years between now and the next legislative session, and the cost will definitely go up. So that was the final point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you for that. And that's a critical point, too, by the way. With that, gentlemen, thank you so very kindly. Appreciate it. And obviously, Representative Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank you for this financial presentation. It's the best one you've made, in my opinion, so over the years. I'm still not sleeping that it's going to be the ultimate amount, but at least there's some detail here that
so thank you very much, Representative Sanford, members of the committee. I've been in the business 38 years. This is my fourth program over